relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Portions of the following program may contain pre-recorded material.
This is America First, and here's your host, Dr. Sebastian Gorka.
We must honestly acknowledge the circumstances we inherited. 94 million Americans are out of the labor force. Over 43 million people are now living in poverty, and over 43 million Americans are on food stamps. More than one in five people in their prime working years are not working. We have the worst financial recovery in 65 years. In the last 8 years, the past administration has put on more new debt than nearly all of the other presidents combined. We've lost more than one-fourth of our manufacturing jobs since NAFTA was approved, and we've lost 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001. Our trade deficit in goods with the world last year was nearly $800 billion. And overseas, we have inherited a series of tragic foreign policy disasters.
That was a reminder, dear friends, of the 4 years of the Trump administration. The first address to Congress by the 45th president of the United States feels like a long, long time ago. What did those 4 years mean for America? How are we going to survive the next three? And what is the future of the Trump MAGA movement? We'll discuss all of these questions and so much more with our very special one-on-one guest. I call him Colonel K. He is the bomb thrower par excellence at townhall.com. Kurt Schlichter, welcome to One-on-One.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Gorka. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. I'm writing my new book, Fall and Rise of America. And I'm writing about a lot of this stuff as we speak.
A perfect, perfect segue. Before we get to the fall and rise of America, the MAGA movement, America First, for those who, for some strange reason, aren't familiar with the good Colonel, his background, where he hails from, what he did before he became a media personality, will you share in a nutshell your bio for us, please? What your parents did, what you did in uniform for the Republic, and what you do today?
Well, let's go back 250 years till my German family was kicked out of Stuttgart by popular demand, came over here to settle in Pennsylvania. Some more Germans followed. There's also an Alsatian in there, plus some Scotch. My parents are both very quintessential Pennsylvanians, and it's very interesting. Both of my grandparents were high school and college coaches in Pennsylvania. Both of them joined the United States Navy during World War II, overage. Both of them were sent to the Pacific, where they both ran fighter pilot recreation camps in the Pacific. So that's kind of weird, but it kind of shows.
Let's just stop there for a second. I couldn't imagine, knowing the ilk of the fighter pilot corps in World War II, running a recreational facility for them. That must have been quite interesting, Kurt. There must be some interesting family stories.
Well, it was. My mother's father, Paul Wagner, was quite the poker player, and he played poker with such folks as Joe Foss, who won a Medal of Honor he won a Medal of Honor as a fighter pilot. Later came back, became a governor, and I think head of the NRA. Interestingly, he had a diary. He said, hey, I was playing poker with Joe Foss. I went and deployed to Kosovo with his nephew, Bill Foss.
Wow. All right, so explain, you know, how you ended up not in the Navy, but in the Army, what your career was, and how you are doing what you're doing today.
look, I was just a suburban kid in San Mateo, California, which is right between San Francisco and Silicon Valley. Back when I was there, it was really kind of leave it to beaver land, as opposed to leave it to communists land, as it is kind of now. So I'm like a quintessential Californian suburban guy. And that's kind of my mindset. My mom, my dad was a chemical engineer, owns, has lots of patents for coffee, for Folgers coffee. He was a naval officer, too. My mom became a lawyer on our kitchen table in 1976. She studied, passed the bar, became a district attorney in San Mateo County, which not a lot of women did then. And as you know, Dr. Gorka, we all, you know, hate women because reasons.
Right.
Mom later became a judge, and she is currently in a rehab facility because she had a little medical thing. We're getting her out of there. I have to go see her today. I joined the Army to get away from her, because I figured drill sergeants would be a break.
But she must have infected you with the interest in the law, no?
Oh, I don't have any interest in the law. I was in Desert Storm as a platoon leader. I was essentially ran a heavily armed car wash, a decontamination platoon with 7th Corps. It turned out I was at 7th Corps headquarters during the war, which I later realized was literally the time and place of the pinnacle of American power, because I was there when we defeated the Republican Guard. Now, I didn't defeat anybody. I was so far in the rear. If you wanted to shoot, if you wanted to get bullets to me, you'd have to FedEx them. But I got to watch history unfold in front of myself. I went to UC San Diego. I wrote on a conservative paper there. I wrote on a comedy paper there, too. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. I had worked in Congress as an intern. I thought maybe I'll go to law school. Maybe that'll kill some time. But then I was like, nah, I'm going to join the military. So my dad wanted me to join the Navy. So, of course, I enlisted in the Army as a private. And I went to basic training. So there's pictures of PFC Schlichter out there. I went to officer candidate school after being in the Army for 8 weeks. And for a suburban guy from California in the military, which is a largely rural, largely Southern influenced organization, I mean, it was a total culture shock. And it was tough. It was the hardest 6 months of my life was basic training and officer candidate school. I'd never had anything tougher. I didn't know whether I was going to succeed. I had to dig very, you know, look, living in the suburbs of California was not hard. Okay. I mean, I ran, I was, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't physically fit or wasn't, you know, a little bit tough, but it was hard because, you know, I was in a place where I had no value. You know, everybody was a special snowflake. You know, I had just been, I dated a, you know, pretty girl in college, and I was running on the newspapers, you know, doing all sorts of things. And now I'm Private Schlichter, and I'm literally nobody because I hadn't earned anything. It didn't matter who I was. And I'm with all these guys who grew up in very different lifestyles than me, and we're having to work together to survive. And I did survive. I got commissioned. I wasn't recycled, thank God. When it was assigned to chemical warfare for reasons I don't know. It's very math intensive. I got my worst grade in math.
It's probably for the same reasons that when I joined the British Army Reserves, the Territorial Army, and they said, do you speak languages? I was in a military intelligence unit. I said, yeah, I speak French, German, and Hungarian, a little bit of Polish. They said, okay, good. You're going to be an interrogator in Russian. The same
yes.
kind of, yeah, the same, the perfect, you know, the logic of the army across the world is the same, Kurt.
That's literally the most army thing I've ever heard. I mean, it is. The thing about the army is it's very interesting because you're in a society that's very individualist and very, very concerned with entrepreneurialism. And then you go to the military and it is completely different. It is, in some ways, a socialist organization. I don't mean that in the bad way. I mean that the means of production are owned by the government, everything. They tell you what to do, what to wear, where to go. You are not operating yourself. You're operating for other people. And the individual doesn't count in the same way.
No, it's a collective entity. We're going to talk about your military career, but I have to get in here. So when did stand-up comedy and law come along into your life? Or are those things the same?
They are remarkably similar. I applied to law school for my platoon fighting position in northern Saudi Arabia and got accepted at Loyola Law School. So I got out of the Army right after leaving the Gulf, and I show up at Loyola Law School in August of 1991. I'm there, right? I'd been a platoon. I'd been in a war. I'd seen a guy die in front of me. You know, so I was in a very different mental place than a lot of the guys just at college who show up literally wearing their fraternity sweatshirt. And it was a culture clash. I got my first thing published in a San Francisco Examiner, writing about what it was like coming back. You know, I stayed at my parents for a while before I went to law school, and I was, you know, I was completely alone. I had no one who understood what I had just gone through.
Okay, hang on. We're going to talk about so just a very quick question, yes or no. At this moment in time, so we can track the trajectory, what are your politics, Kurt?
Oh, I'm always conservative.
Okay, you're always conservative. I wanted to get that on the record before we proceed. We're talking to Kurt Schlichter, senior contributor with our buddies at townhall.com, the author of a slew of fabulous books. We'll be discussing them, the fictional series, as well as his non-fictional works as well. But be sure to follow him at Kurt Schlichter and his writings at townhall.com. This is America First One-on-One. If you enjoy listening to our deep dive interviews, please support those who make our shows possible, especially Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. Use my name and Mike's going to give you up to 66% off. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A. Back with Colonel K after these messages. This is America First, coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studios. Relief Factor, pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans across the country from their daily pain. People like Leah from Ohio. This is Leah's story. One Sunday morning, I sat on my couch in so much pain I was in tears. That's the day I ordered Relief Factor. Following directions, in 8 days, I found relief, only to get better and better. I'm a believer 100%. That should be you. That could be you. Find out today. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at relieffactor.com or call 800-500-8384. What are you waiting for? 800-500-8384. Relieffactor.com. You can now watch America First on TV, and I urge you to check us out. Go to salemnews.com or download the app today. You can also watch us on Roku and Fire Stick. That's Salem News Channel, the antidote to the lying legacy media. And we're back with Colonel Kurt Schlichter. Okay, so you're back from the Gulf War. You've just started law school, a little bit more mature than the people around you. Give us how things proceed from that point, Kurt.
Well, it was interesting. I was in kind of a strange place. I would party harder than anybody else in law school because, you know, as an Army guy.
You could, because you knew how to and you could do it. You could survive it.
I could, and I'm back from the Gulf. I'm not with any other military people. I think there were a total of four veterans out of 400 in my class. Wow. One guy had like 20 years ago been in the Air Force. There was another guy who'd been a SEAL, and it was strange. And I didn't really stop until about 6 months later when I joined the California Army National Guard. And I don't know why I did. I guess I just wanted to be back with, you know, at least once a month, a few days a month, be with guys who kind of knew what I did. And I found myself in the Los Angeles riots.
Which you said was scarier than being deployed to the Balkans, right?
Oh, gosh, much, much more so. The L.A. riots, I was living in Pasadena. I look at this thing and I... You know, we weren't expecting to get deployed. When I had actually joined up, I'm standing in the operations room at the Inglewood Armory in Burbank, and I said, so what happens if we get mobilized? And the full-time guys just laughed. 20-some years later, as commander in that armory, I would deploy a company standing in that same place. I gave the order to set up a go. But at that time, I call into the unit. I say, look, I'm watching people get the hell beaten out of them on TV. Are we getting deployed? Nah, they're not going to call us up. I go, oh, okay. And having enough experience in the Army, I immediately packed my stuff.
Just in case.
I got the order. Just in case. I got the order. Come on in. I had sold all my guns in Germany. I had no firearms. And I had to drive into South Central Los Angeles during the riots with no gun. And I get off the I-10, the 10 freeway, to head into Inglewood. I think I was at La Brea. And I come up to an LAPD police line. They're blocking it off. And they look at me, and they got their, shotguns and everything. And cop comes up to me and goes, what the hell are you doing? I'm sitting there in my uniform. I'm a first lieutenant. I go, I got to go in there. I'm National Guard. My unit's in there. He goes, do you got a gun? I said, no. He goes, you sure you really want to go in there? I'm like, no, not at all. But I don't really have a choice. And I got to the unit, and everyone had brought their own guns. The Army at that time, California is now the number one civil support guard in the country. There's nobody better. I'm so proud of our guys. At that time, it was a disaster. We were not ready. All the ammunition was centralized in Central California because, and you'll recognize this is one of the most Army things ever, it's easier to count if it's all in one place. So everybody brought their own firearms. And I remember sitting in there, and a guy who was a postman in civilian life comes in with a duffel bag and dumps a duffel bag of guns on a desk, a table, and goes, take what you need.
So it was the smorgasbord. It was the help yourself buffet of firearms to deal with the L.A. riots.
Yes, it was. My guys were mostly from South Central, which is the area that was literally on fire. And my guys were having none of it. These are great guys. They look terrible. I'm there. I'm 160 pounds. My uniform is perfect. I got my little patch on my right shoulder. And these guys look like somebody threw their uniforms at them. I'm like, who are these guys? they roll in. Now, it would take us, if we're going to the field, we're spending 3 days getting ready for the field. These guys knew their jobs because they knew each other. They were friends. They knew the equipment. They knew their gear. 2 hours, these guys are ready to be on the street.
Wow.
Incredible soldier.
Wow.
Just great. I learned, suburban guy, middle of an urban riot. Let me tell you, I was learning drinking from a fire hose.
Listen to the guys from the neighborhood. We're talking to Kurt Schlichter, senior contributor at townhall.com. Follow him, Kurt Schlichter, on Twitter. We're going to talk about the things he's produced outside of Town Hall momentarily. But you still haven't got to the stand-up comedy and your law practice.
I became a lawyer. I thought I was going to be a criminal lawyer like my mom. And I realized I didn't want to deal with criminals. So I went into civil law, that is suing people, defending companies. And I worked for a big law firm. And I started getting business. I got Circuit City as an accountant, which was, a big company. And I'm like a 2-year lawyer. And I'm doing trials very early. And I'm still getting the same $500 bonus as the guy they caught sleeping under the desk. So they offered me the bonus. I made them a counter offer, which was, how about I keep everything? And in 1998, I went out on my own with a friend. Within 4 months, I had won my first multi-million dollar verdict, a defamation verdict, by the way. And, I've been a partner at my own firm ever since, basically able to do what I wanted to do. But I was, I had broken up with a girlfriend. I was just kind of like bored. I decided I would try stand-up comedy because I'd always been, amusing. I was still selling freelance stuff. I wrote jokes.
There's a lot of people who are amusing, but very few of them decide, I'm going to do this in public in front of strangers, Kurt.
Well, I have no shame gene. I literally don't care. There are people out there, and I don't understand it. I mean, I get that they are afraid of speaking to a crowd, but it doesn't click to me. I don't like heights. I jumped out of airplanes, but only to get the badge to impress girls, and only did it 5 times. I don't like heights, but I understand why you're afraid of heights. I don't understand why people are afraid of speaking in public. I love it.
Yeah.
And so stand-up comic never worried me. The trouble with stand-up is I'm a very competitive guy, and half the time you are below average, about. So I would get very annoyed when I did poorly, and when I did really well, I'd like it. But I'd always better. How can I be funnier? And I found I was a very good writer for other people. I was an okay performer. I still speak, and I can still do an hour, for a group. If you want to hire me, I'm very expensive.
bet you are.
But yeah, well, I'll talk to a conservative group. I'll spend an hour up there, often get a standing ovation because I try and deliver same way I do in front of a jury. And
so you ended up writing material for others?
Yes. I write for a lot of other comics. And then I met my wife. I got married. We had a kid. And then I had to deploy. And that was the end of my going to stand-up. You know, I'm not going to spend time out in, you know, smoky clubs with a kid and a wife who hadn't seen me in 16 months.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, for a couple years, I'm just kind of, you know, working in law. I'm still writing occasionally. And then Andrew Breitbart comes.
All right, let's stop there for a second. I want to make sure everybody understands we do this every single day. It's America First one-on-one. If you want to make sure you never miss one of our long-form interviews with people like, Colonel K, President Trump, VDH, and others, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Just look for my name, Sebastian Gorka, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as Rumble. Yes, it's free. It is the First Amendment alternative to the fascists at YouTube. Just go to rumble.com/Seb Gorka today, and you won't miss a thing. That's rumble.com/SEBGORKA. More from Kurt Schlichter after this break. Whether it's the regular Hellcat or whether it's the compensated RDP with that miniature red dot, I love them all. How did it take so long to invent a factory compensated subcompact 9mm? Well, guess what? Springfield did it, and I'm a huge fan, and I'm Sebastian Gorka.
The Hellcat from Springfield Armory is still the smallest, highest capacity micro compact in the world. Available in standard or optics-ready configurations, class-leading capacity of the Hellcat gives you 11+1 with the standard magazine and 13+1 with the included extended mag. The definitive concealed carry pistol is here. The Hellcat from Springfield Armory gives you the capacity to defend.
The most awesome pipes in talk radio. Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to One on One with Kurt Schlichter. The story continues, and it's, of course, Andrew Breitbart is inserted into the story. So, Kurt Schlichter, explain the next genesis of your career and the relevance of the great, late, much-missed Andrew Breitbart.
Well, this thing called Facebook came out, and somebody... from law school, who's kind of liberal, said, you need to meet my conservative friend, Andrew Breitbart. And I'd heard of it because I was looking at a lot of conservative media, but I wasn't doing anything anymore. And I got in touch with him, and we really bonded over 80s music and Mexican food. Very Southern California pursuits. In that way, we were very, very similar. And I knew he was doing something called Big Hollywood, which was the precursor to Breitbart.
Yeah, this is what they used to call the verticals. So they had the various verticals, like Big Politics, Big Hollywood. These were the segments of the prototype Breitbart.com website.
That's right. And I saw that the studios were going to open the new Star Trek movie overseas in Kuwait for our troops. And I thought, you know, you always got to give praise. You can't just criticize. They're critical of Hollywood, but you got to reward them. So I say, hey, Andrew, hey, I saw this story. This thing's happening. Why don't you get somebody to write about it? He goes, why don't you? Okay. And I did, and I found I couldn't write a straight story. I had to be snarky. I had to be amusing. And I kind of delight in taking, you know, playing word games, unbelievably long, convoluted sentences, bizarre analogies and imagery. It's just fun for me. And I did it, and it got published. And Andrew goes, what next? What are you going to write next? The interesting thing is I was in so early. I mean, right after our mutual friend, Larry O'Connor, who I later did. I did his show with another guy named Ben Shapiro. And we would get on his Larry's internet show for the Hour of Hate and just rage. But I was the one guy who never got the writer, the legal packet. The lawyer's the guy who didn't get the legal packet. I'm the only guy who never wrote an NDA for working with Brett.
Fascinating. Because I know all of these people. I know Larry. I never got to meet Andrew, but his colleague, also Larry Soloff, who created Breitbart, and of course Alex Marlow, his first employee. I want to work out how we go from that, from writing those initial pieces, to what you're doing today. I think it's number 6 in your Kelly Turnbull story. But before we do that, friends, if you haven't done so already, do it today. We've got our new dates. The China virus forced us to cancel our trip to the Holy Land this year, but we are going. We've got it. November 30th, December 9th, 2022. 10 days in the Middle East. We're going to walk where our Lord and Savior walked the earth. And guess who's coming with us? None other than Dinesh D'Souza. Join us for the trip of a lifetime. Even if you've been to Israel, you've never been with me. You've never been to the Temple Mount, to the Sea of Galilee, to the Wailing Wall, to the Dead Sea with me and Dinesh. Order, book your seats today. Call 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. That's 855-565-5519, standwithisraeltour.com. Kurt, you've got behind your raid. Let's take a shot, Eric. You've got a raid behind you. Very nicely done. I think, yes, all of his books. You've got Crisis, Wildfire, Indian Country. You've got People's Republic, Collapse, and the most recent, The Split. This is your Kelly Turnbull series of adventures. Novels. I want to ask you, why did you start writing those very successful books? Number one, what was the thing that made you do that? And secondly, I think a lot of our listeners, we've got millions of listeners across the country, plus all the viewers. Why did you decide to self-publish? Because this is a trend that is getting bigger and bigger.
Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, we go back to Andrew Breitbart. Andrew Breitbart famously said, politics is downstream from culture.
Right.
And we get so much garbage that's woke. I mean, just the other day I was told, I had stopped watching it, but Yellowstone is a big favorite from conservatives. Well, now it's got a favorable Antifa character, and Kevin Costner's talking about climate change. I'm tired of it. I don't
it
want
happens.
That.
It's always the third or fourth season.
Yes.
It's like 24. 24 was, we're going to do the jihadis, we're going to take them out, and it gets woke, and the white supremacists are the enemy by season 6.
Yeah.
Every decent TV series, third, fourth season, it goes down the crapper.
Exactly. And I've always liked airplane books, a book you can open on the airplane and really enjoy. And I just decided, gosh, I want to write something that I'd like to read, and I want to be able to comment on what's going on in our society. What could happen next? What are the possibilities? Because, the trends are looking kind of ugly. So this was 2016. Trump was running. Yeah, he had been nominated, but he hadn't been not won yet. But I put out People's Republic. Oh, that's the wrong way. People's Republic. It's over here somewhere. There it is. People's Republic. The first one, and it's about America split in two, and into red and blue states, and you have an operative from the red, he goes into the blue, and I got to talk about what America would look like without any kind of conservative leavening influence.
All of you out there know that MyPillow doesn't have giant box stores or any shopping channels. They've been instead targeted by cancel culture, but now they want to pass on big savings directly to you. Get the lowest price in the history of MyPillow for their classic standard MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with my promo code. They also have queen-size pillows, regularly $79.98, now only $24.98 with promo code GORKA, or king-size pillows, usually $89.98, now only $29.98 with my promo code. MyPillow is not just pillows. They have over 150 products, everything from sleepwear to actual beds. Promo code GORKA also works at mystore.com and frankspeech.com. Call today, 800-829-8468. That's 800-829-8468. MyPillow.com, promo code GORKA.
The truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. That's Dr. G's specialty, America First.
And we are back with none other than townhall.com's Kurt Schlichter. Kurt, explain to us your reason, Kurt, for self-publishing your series of novels. Why self-publish?
Well, three reasons. The first reason is it's very hard to sell any kind of fic. There's such a glut out there, and the publishers just don't want it. My agent can sell a nonfiction book in about three taps. That's easy. A fiction book, almost impossible. You basically have to be a Matt Bentley or a Carr, I forget his name, or Vince Flynn,
right?
The guy who writes Vince Flynn thing. And then you can do it. But otherwise, it's going to be very hard. The second thing is my stuff is outrageously conservative. It is going to it would terrify a publishing house. And in fact, the Bulwark guys have attacked it as racist, even though I would dare anybody to read any of the six books and tell me what color the main character is.
Well, of course, it doesn't matter.
Because it doesn't matter. I don't care. Idris Elba wants to do the movie. Nobody'd be happier than me. Anybody. It's so silly to me. The last thing is, if you do it right, you can do very well on self-publishing. And I'm all about multiple streams of income. I am a capitalist. I sell these books because they do, in fact, sell. And they've gotten as high as 29 out of all the books on Amazon. For a book I wrote here in this house.
Fabulous. Check it out. The latest is The Split, the Kelly Turnbull series. Super, super fun read. And also with some special cameo appearances by people you may recognize with funny accents. you're not just a commentator, a lawyer, and also a writer of fiction. You've also written nonfiction. Let's swim into that territory. Your most recent book was The 21 Lies About You and President Trump. You're working on your new one. I can't wait for that to come out. But Kurt, let's talk about politics. This is a piece of audio that aired on our show yesterday, and it has to do with perhaps the greatest challenge to our nation, and that's not the left, it's the rhinos. This is Dan Crenshaw speaking at a fundraiser, really revealing who he is. Play cuts.
There's other front runners, but why support these two? Well, because I've been in Congress for almost 3 years now. There's two types of members of Congress. There's performance artists, and there's legislators. Now, the performance artists are the ones that get all the attention. They're the ones you think are more conservative because they know how to say slogans real well. They know how to recite the lines that they know that our voters want to hear. Let me tell you guys something. In the first 2 years of Trump's presidency, when Republicans were in control, when every single time we were voting on Donald Trump's agenda, who do you think was at the top of that list voting with Trump, and who do you think was at the bottom? A lot of names you would recognize were at the bottom of that list. A lot of names you would recognize are at the top of that list. Number two is probably going to make you cringe a little bit. It's Adam Kinzinger. Voted with Trump almost 99%. He was number two. You know who's at the bottom? Everybody in the Freedom Caucus. All of them. What you hear so often is not true. It's not true. We have grifters in our midst.
Yeah, and the grifter in our midst we're listening to is, of course, Dan Crenshaw himself. What he just stated at that fundraiser is a lie. Crenshaw is lying about Kinzinger. Kinzinger did not vote 99% of the time with Donald Trump, and the Freedom Caucus didn't vote against him. It's utter garbage. Let's talk about the broader point here. So having listened to the audio from Crenshaw, talk to us about, because you skewer these guys day in, day out, whether it's the Bulwark, which I didn't even know still existed, or the Lincoln Project. How serious comparatively is the Never Trump Rhino movement? Or do you think that we're finally winning, Kurt?
Well, I do think we are winning. I think the Republican caucus is moving to the right. A lot of people are like, I can't deal with the Republicans. Guys, we have a system that is structurally designed for two parties. There's got to be a party of the right, got to be a party of the left. The party of the right is right now the Republican Party, and that's where you need to make your fight. That's how I assess it, as, you know, a big deal war college graduate.
Which he is, by the way. He likes to throw that in because we're war college
party
buddies.
War college.
Carry on.
Well, look, but when you have a coalition of 50% of America, you're going to have people on the left. Look, I would rather have a Susan Collins who agrees with me about 65% of the time than any Democrat. And I understand that there's just going to be people farther to my left. I want to pressure them to vote my way. But I'm not. Look, I'm never going to be mad at Susan Collins because Susan
Collins. But that's another issue. Let's talk about those who say they're conservatives,
exactly.
Say they're Republicans, and then vote for the impeachment of a Republican president.
I am so done with these people. You got to know what time it is. You got to get conservative woke. You have to understand what the fight is, and the fight is not, well, we're all good friends, and you know we're going to shake hands at 5 o'clock and be pals. These are people who literally want you to take your job, maybe take your freedom. If you're on Twitter long enough, there'll be people telling you they want you to take your life. And I don't know, when somebody tells me he wants to see me dead, either because I don't feel the same way about vaccines he does, or because I like Donald Trump, or because I like America or Israel, I'm going to take them at their word. And history supports me in that. There is no Marxist government. And there are people here who want a Marxist government that has not been built on a foundation of corpses. And I don't intend to be one of those corpses. If I'm going down, it's on a mountain of brass.
I love that phrase, and I concur wholeheartedly. They can come and take it from my cold, dead fingers. But the good thing is, if there were a civil war, God forbid if there were, there's only one side that actually knows how to use the guns and isn't afraid of them, and that's the side that Kurt Schlichter and myself are on. Follow this guy, Kurt Schlichter, on Twitter. Read his books. Read his articles at townhall.com.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
The most awesome pipes in talk radio, Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome back to One on One with Kurt Schlichter. Talk to us about your understanding of the America First movement, MAGA, the midterms in 2024.
I absolutely agree with you about what we need. The question is, who is the person? Now, I am a big fan of Donald Trump. I was not early on. I became one because he earned it. He earned my respect. Through keeping his word, which I did not think he was going to do. I thought he was just a narrow politician. I was wrong. I changed. I became a big supporter. As you noted, I wrote a book about it. I am also entirely unsentimental. If Donald Trump is not the best candidate, I will not support him. If he is the best candidate, that is most likely a win and affect conservative change, I will. I know a lot of people are very loyal to Donald Trump, and I am too. But his loyalty, the loyalty of a politician is to the people. And if he's not going to be the best, then he needs to get out of the way. Now, the question is, will he be the best? He may very well be. You look at the polls right now, and I know the president is looking at them. Joe Biden is polling right down there with Tophums, and Kamala is doing even worse. I think Donald Trump has a lot of he has a ceiling of support because there are people out there who irrationally hate him. But I think there are a lot of people who are sorry that they gave Biden a chance because they saw Biden falsely as normalcy. They saw Trump as a disruptive force. Trump is a disruptive force, and I think that's what we need. But that's but you know, I don't represent all Americans.
And the thing we have the greatest problem with is these people who say they're conservatives and Republicans, and they still say it now, a year later. Well, you know, the tweets. Kurt, your response.
I love the tweets. That being said, I think one of the poorest strategic decisions of the, you know, tech titan types was to censor Trump's ability to use social media, because it effectively took Trump off the front page and eliminated their talking point that Trump's this giant disruptive force. Now he's kind of in the background. He's making money. He's making plans. He is supporting candidates, and it's all under the radar because he can't tweet about it. I think those guys really shot themselves in the foot with it. The mean tweets is kind of shorthand for, you know, Trump is scary and disruptive. But again, I like disruptive. I want disruptive. Is that the best tactic to use in pursuit of our objective? It may very well be. There are other people who do a lot of conservative stuff without that. And they may run in the primary, or they may not. I don't know. Look, I will happily support the president if he's the right guy, certainly if he's the nominee. My feeling is he's got to come back and win the primary. He's got to convince people, it's me again, let's do this thing.
You made exactly the same point Victor Davis Hanson did, that he's even more influential now that he's been censored on the main platforms and removed that avenue of attack for the lying legacy media. We shall see. I know one thing. There's nobody on the left or the right who can fill a stadium of 60,000 people in less than 24 hours. And that by itself is a metric of something. You've got to follow this guy, Kurt Schlichter, on Twitter. He says he formerly ran an armed car wash. It's a little bit more substantive than that. Read his Kelly Turnbull series. The latest is Split. Also, can't wait for his nonfiction work, and read his articles at townhall.com. God bless you, Kurt. Keep doing what you do. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Keep your head on a swivel. Watch your six. Hold the line. Never give up. Never give in. And stay frosty.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.